This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
Welcome to another episode of Deluxe Edition. I am your host, Casey Shearer. Joining me, as always, he's the man, he's the myth, he's the legend, L. Ray Sexton.
What's going on, my friend?
Not too much, Ray. How are you, buddy?
I'm having a fantastic day.
Good. It's good to see you, man. Doing things a little different here. I wore my same shirt to try and make it look seamless, but
no, sir. I couldn't remember what I was wearing. I didn't shave. I don't have my earrings in, and I switched my hat.
If you would like to see the recording that we did after this interview, where I got hammered drunk, and the reason that we're re-recording it, go over to our patreon.com/deluxeeditionpod. Right there is the banner. That's
because when you're a Patreon, you get every video as it was recorded without any of the stuff that other people shouldn't see. Well, things you shouldn't see, but you get it all.
Yeah. So go over to patreon.com/deluxeeditionpod, or we are on Instagram and Twitter at deluxeeditionpod. You could find all of our previous shows over at deluxeedition.show. And let's see, if you want to support the show a little more, go over to whatamaneuver.net/collections/deluxe-edition, buy a couple t-shirts. There are also t-shirts for our network over there, the Deluxe Edition Network. And you can find all of the other great shows over at deluxeeditionnetwork.com, like the podcasts of the month, Bev's Video Kingdom. Great dudes out in California. I just had dinner with Scott the other day out in Modesto. That's a story for another time. It was great leading up to my meeting with Scott, but after I left, it was the worst fucking day of my life. And we are sponsored by GetSlicks.com. Head over to GetSlicks.com and grab a hat or a hoodie or a t-shirt. They have some really great stuff over there. And Ray, where can people find you, bud?
I am the 10 Cent Beer Night Podcast. You can find me on Spotify exclusively. And if you want to come hang out with me and make comments about what horrible posts I make, or if you like the post, you can say that too on Instagram and Facebook. One of these days I'll get around to that Twitter thing.
No, Twitter sucks, man. I'm actually thinking about canceling our Twitter. We get no action on Twitter.
Well, maybe we should tell the people then. Tell the people. We get no action on the Twitter, so come give us action.
Yeah, come give us a little action on Twitter. I try to stay current with it. What can you tell us about today's guest?
Not a whole lot. That's your job.
Our guest today was A.T. Sharma. Going into this, we knew very little about A.T., and it turns out that this is it's actually one of my favorite episodes, going back and listening to it again, you know, during the editing and all that. He was a great guest. We learned a lot about him, and go watch his movie Hypnotica, coming out March 31st. And I'm going to play the trailer right after this before our interview with A.T. Sharma.
Doctor, things are going the wrong direction for me.
I'm a hopeless case.
Listen to me.
There is one more thing.
For us to have any success here, we're going to do this my way or no way at all. With each snap, you will fall deeper and deeper.
I want you to go back in time. How old are you?
Hey, what's 8.
Tell me what you see.
Blood. There's a basin filled with my blood. The places they cut me up, I'm bleeding.
Is there anyone else there?
They're all sleeping now. It's their turn.
He's obsessing about his patients. He's isolating from relationships.
I've been sensing something. It's dark. You need to be careful.
You know what the problem is? Impulse. You thought about it. Death.
Are you a good boy?
I have his knife. It's all I need. She's downstairs.
You need to stop bringing your work home.
This is a man's life.
But what about our life?
Enough.
I can't fail.
I've opened the door. What do you see?
She's hanging from a rope. She cut her wrists.
Wake up.
I let you experiment on me. This is my reward. I want to play with her.
This is enough.
It's too late. I can't stop the things that are coming. Doctor. I don't think you can make me well.
Let it out.
Very good. Hey, so you're going to have to tell us some information, man. We'd like to dive deep into everyone's careers and all of that stuff, but
yeah,
this being a last minute podcast and this being your first feature film that we're here to talk about,
yeah,
it was very hard to find some info on you, so you're gonna have to help us out here.
Yeah. So what would you guys like to know, more about me or what?
Yeah, let's talk about you, man. I know very little about you. You went to the New York Film School after graduating from medical school. Mm-hmm. And you had a short film that was on TV in Canada, but that's basically all I know about you.
Okay. Well, I don't want to bore you guys too much, so let me be as quick as
I can. Bore us away, man. We want to know about you.
Cut me off anytime you want. Don't worry. Because I'm not one of these people that's in love with the sound of my own voice. But I'll just tell you this. So I'm from Canada. I grew up in Canada and I grew up in Nova Scotia, which in a little town in Nova Scotia. And, I was the only kid. I was the only child in the family and I was the only brown kid in that school. And then, I went to undergrad in Halifax and I went to medical school in Halifax and I used to practice ER in downtown Toronto. And when I started working in the ER, I said, you know what? I want to make movies. So I went down to NYU and they had a summer intensive program where you could go down there for 7 days every day. It was the whole summer, but it was 7 days a week. And it was like 13, 14 hours a day you're making movies, right? In Washington Square Park. So I stayed in the dorm there and everything, cockroaches and all. My buddy and I went down. So that was a blast. And then when I came back, I made my first short film in Toronto, and that did really well, like surprisingly well, which I didn't expect, but it was kind of a wild film. And then I made another short film that was shown on national TV in Canada in what's called the Women's Television Network, which would be like Lifetime down here. And then I came down here and I made, started making movies down here. And just, I was with ICM, the agency ICM, for a while because I had a script that got really, really great coverage, but they never made it. And I said, fuck this. I got to do something. I'm going to make a movie. And so we just did it. And so I just started making movies and we made Hypnotica. And that's the one I think we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Hypnotica is great, man. Ran, I just watched it this past week.
Well, thank you. Thanks.
Going to medical school and then deciding to make movies, that's a, that's a hefty price tag to, you know, do first.
Yeah, well, look, first of all, you know, in Canada, a lot of your education is sponsored. So I didn't have to pay. I didn't have a huge debt. So that's one thing. But what happened is that what debt I did have, I started working to pay it off, because I honestly thought before I went into medical school, I wanted to do like a philosophy degree or something, shit like that, you know. And then I thought, okay, you know, I got accepted into medical school, and I went to the head of the metaphysics department at Dalhousie, and I just took a chance, and his name was Professor Tompkins. And he's the classic guy in philosophy, and he was sitting there at his desk smoking a pipe, and his feet were up, and I said, sorry, excuse me, Professor Tompkins, I wonder if I can ask you a question. And he looked at me, he said, yeah, come on in. And, you know, I was like, what, how old was I? Like early 20s. I would have been like 23 or 24 at the time. And so he said, sit down. And he said, what can I do for you? I said, well, look, I just got accepted into medical school, but I really want to study metaphysics and philosophy and, you know, all this and the meaning of life and all this shit. And so he's like, he takes a second and he takes the pipe out of his mouth, puts his feet down, leans over the desk, and he says, are you crazy? Man, I got people graduating with PhDs that can't get a job. Go to medical school. So I said, oh, shit. Okay. So I went to medical school. And then, but halfway through medical school, I got the idea of making movies because I knew somebody that was going to film school at Concordia, and she was really cool, and I just really liked her. And I thought, that's a pretty cool idea. And so then I started, you know, getting more and more thinking about that. And then once I started working, which is the point I was making, is once I started working, you know, you start to get into this thing where you're paying off the debts, but you also get a lifestyle. And then because I didn't know how long I would practice medicine, but then I started practicing, and then you kind of sucks you in and you just keep doing it. So that's what happened. So you know, I've been doing both for the last several years.
So yeah, you basically made a movie to impress a girl.
Well, isn't that why anybody does anything?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what are we doing here, man? I got you two guys. I need, where's the girl? Where's the ladies?
Well, my girlfriend hates podcasting, so I apologize for my internet connections here. It's storming here in Florida. But what I was asking you earlier, AT, is growing up in Canada, you mentioned at that school that you went to, you were the only brown student there.
Yeah.
Was there a reason you mentioned that? Did you have some trouble growing up?
Well, you know, look, when I look back on it, at the time, I didn't think about it that much. But now when we see all this stuff about inclusion and diversity and all these things, then it strikes me at how incredibly racist it was there. And, you know, I love Canada. Canadians are great people. I mean, really an incredible people down the middle, awesome people. But, you know, there was certainly a lot of covert and overt racism in that town. It was a town of like 5,000 people where I grew up. And, you know, like we were talking about, I just wanted to get laid somehow, some way. And it was impossible because I was brown and I probably smelled like curry and I was skinny and I was a bookworm. So none of those things helped at all, you know. But you know, my parents cooked curry in the house, and sometimes I would literally shut the door, put towels on the bottom and everything, and the smell was like some kind of incredible gas because it would get into all my clothes and stuff. And so I would go to school, and I didn't know, and I dressed like I couldn't figure out how to dress or anything. So I mean, now that I think back on it, I got called the N-word a lot. I got, you know, you just, it's just stuff, but honestly, to me, I didn't care. It was like, I just said, you know, the people that were like that, I just thought I'll show them someday. But I never thought, oh, man, I'm a victim of racism or anything like that. I just thought, just go on and do what you can in the environment you got. And hopefully someday you'll find a way to get laid.
Yeah. So what took your parents to Canada?
Great question. I think At some level, my dad was crazy, and I think that was one of the driving factors. He went to London first. He was there for 6 months and then figured out that, Bridgewater, Nova Scotia would be the ideal place for a brown family to move to. So that's about all I know. I don't have a better answer than that.
Yeah. Huh. All right. So what happened with medical school?
I graduated medical school. It was the hardest thing I've ever gone through in my life. It was unbelievably hard, unbelievably hard. We started with a class of 96, and in second year was the hardest. We lost like 16 people to fail. They failed or whatever happened. They got put back a year or they just dropped out or whatever. But I got through somehow, and then I moved to Toronto and I started working in the ER in downtown Toronto. And then I started going to a class acting for directors. And then from there, I went to NYU, and then I came back to Toronto, and then I moved down here.
So tell us about this, the short film. I've written it's an award-winning short film shown on TV in Canada.
It's all hype and bullshit, man. No. what can I tell? The first short film I did, I wrote it when I was down in New York at NYU, and it was just it was about an old man that lost his wife. She died, and he's alone in a senior's home, and every day he somehow finds a way to escape, and he goes to this local porn cinema and he sits in there and he watches all these young people having sex. But really in his head, he's dreaming about the day he first proposed to his wife and stuff on the beach and stuff. And then they go looking for him, and they finally, they find him in the cinema. But before they get there, he sees his wife up on the stage as this porn is playing, and she's standing there. And he goes up and he's up there as an old man, and she's a young woman from when he first proposed. And she takes his hand and she leads him out of the cinema. And when they find him, he's dead in the movie theater. Mm. So it was a movie about kind of like, how lonely it is to grow old in an environment where people, you don't have your family, you don't have a lot of things. It's a big fear of mine, growing old. And, I'm scared to death of it. And so that's what that short was about.
I think that's a fear that a lot of us live with. I mean, I don't want to grow old.
Yeah. No, exactly.
That's why I have this fucking cool Rick and Morty shirt on.
I think that'll do it, Casey. I think that you found a fountain of youth in that shirt. Yeah. I need one of those shirts.
So, growing up, so what time period are we talking? How old of a guy are you?
Oh, I never say my age because this is LA, but I'm middle aged. Let's okay. put it that way. So
90s, growing up in the 90s up there.
Yeah, you could say yeah.
All right, yeah.
Some 80s, 90s, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Same with me. Same with Ray.
Right. Yeah.
Ray's the old head of the group.
Yes, sir. I'm a ripe old 51, and I always say if I get past 60, that'll be amazing.
That's good, man. Rock on. Who gives a shit? Age is just a number anyway, so.
That's correct.
But no, I mean, it's like a fear, I still have this fear, and like you say, Casey, it's, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't want to be old and irrelevant, and people don't love you and they don't care about you. And it's the worst thing is to be, I think the thing about old age for me probably is being abandoned, being alone, and then I think that probably relates back to my growing up, because when we moved to Canada, I didn't speak any English at all. I was like 5, 6 years old, and the only word I knew was hello. So, going to school, it was always this fear of, I think for me, for the first couple of years is, am I going to fit into this place? Am I going to fit in with these people? Am I going to be able to have a life, or will I be alone, all my life? And I'm sure that ties into the fear of getting old and being alone and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you move into Canada at five? not knowing any English other than hello. How did you, was it hard for you to learn? Because you speak perfect English now.
Oh, well, hey, I appreciate that. After a few drinks, not so good. But yeah, exactly. That's my best English, actually, though, the not so good drunken English. We just moved there. And then I just remember being in elementary school, and the teacher was talking. I didn't understand a word she was saying. I didn't understand what anybody was saying. And I remember when they would have recess, I would go to the door and I would watch the kids play, but I was standing right by the door waiting for class to be let in so we could get on with the day and stuff like this. But look, you just learn it because you're strongly motivated to learn it. And so then I just picked it up. And I think by grade one, I was pretty much fluent and stuff.
That's wild that back then they were just like, oh yeah, here's a kid. He doesn't speak any English. He just goes right into the class. There you go, buddy. Good luck.
Listen, I've had a few words with my dad about that's the least of the shit he did. It was just like, fuck you, son. Here you go. We got other shit to do. So, you know, you're on your own, you know.
Right. He strikes me as the kind of dad that chucks a kid in the swimming pool and says, swim or drown. Here you go, buddy.
I think you're right. I'm lucky we didn't have a swimming pool. I might not be here.
Yeah, that's fascinating, man. My brother-in-law, he's a cardiologist here in Tallahassee. Same thing. He moved to the States here when he was around that age, 5 or 6. From India, didn't know a lick of English, and basically learned from just watching television, like watching a lot of American television.
And now I'm trying to do that all over again with Spanish, trying to learn Spanish. My wife is from Colombia. She grew up here, but she watches Spanish novellas all the time. But I don't know how you learn it if nobody's telling you what the word means. You can hear the word 100 times. If you don't know what it means, you're never really going to figure it out. So I don't know how people do that. I've tried. I can't figure it out.
Yeah, it's mind blowing.
It is mind blowing. Yeah, I think that speaks to somebody's intelligence to be able to watch TV and learn a language. I mean, they must remember it in different contexts and then put it together.
Yeah, right. Because you're like you said, like I've watched. You know, when I was younger, I watched Spanish television. The chicks on Spanish television
watching the Weather Girls on Telemundo. That's what you're watching. Yeah,
amazing. Some of these soap operas are like softcore erotica that she watches. And she says to me, honey, are you okay watching this? I'm like, oh, hell yeah. Honey, this is amazing. I just get a chance to learn Spanish. And meanwhile, I'm like, you know, like squirming because I'm hard as a rock. And like, holy shit. They're half naked. It's unbelievable. And their bodies are unreal. I can talk like this because nobody else is in the house right now.
Yeah. My girlfriend is in Arizona as well. So I can talk freely as well.
And she doesn't like podcasts anyway. So you're off the hook.
Right. So yeah, she hates it. But yeah, like you said, like you could watch that all day long and hear what they're saying. But unless you have like your wife is there, like, you know, she could tell you what they're saying. But, you know, for my brother-in-law, he's watching television, at a young age. How is he learning what, you know, are you just repeating what I Love Lucy is saying on television? Like how, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, I think, for him to do it like that. You got to remember, for me, I was in elementary. So in a sense, we're learning the language and stuff. So that was a big help, you know.
Sure.
So, right. So, you know, so I got a chance to be taught it in a way as I was learning it and stuff. But for watching television and learning it, I think that's somebody really smart. And obviously he is. He's a cardiologist now.
He's a smart
guy. I
got to
tell you a funny story, Casey, about my dad. He used to love wrestling, right? And imagine this Indian guy with a thick, you know, Indian accent. And then he would take us to the local rink to go watch wrestling, right? Every Friday night. And he said, chalo, beta, come on, let's go to the wrestling. And so we would go there and he would watch wrestling and he'd get so into it. And the guy would have a hidden object and then he'd do this number and the ref was looking the other way. And it was crazy. And he'd go nuts, right? And he'd get this wicked headache and he'd come home like, I cannot do this anymore. Every time I'm getting such a headache and I can't. But he would go next Friday, right? And then one day I was at school and somebody said, you know, wrestling is fake, right, dude? And I said, what? And then I started watching the wrestling. I said, shit. Because I used to think these guys are amazing. They're animals. I mean, look at off the top rope, and they're just – it's incredible. And so I told my dad, I said, Dad, I think wrestling is fake. And dude, the look on that guy's face, I mean, at first he says, oh, no, you're crazy. That's – obviously, it's real. Look at – they cannot fake this. And then he started looking at it more and more. And then he stopped watching it altogether. And I feel bad. I think I took away one of the joys of his life.
That's awesome, dude. So this was in Canada. So were you watching like Bret Hart and stuff as a kid? Like, was it Stampede Wrestling?
I don't remember the names of those guys. I just remember there was the Scientific Wrestler and then there was the Beast Wrestler, and there might have even been a guy named the Beast or something, but I don't remember their names. There was some guy, I think John Carpenter or something, or I don't even remember all their names, but yeah. And there was one Indian guy, I think. There was actually an Indian guy, but they always sent him out, and he was the Scientific Wrestler, and he always lost.
you stumbled on something that Casey actually loves, which is wrestling.
I didn't stumble on it. I heard that in a podcast. Casey, I got to tell you the story.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome, man. Very cool. Very cool to hear that. Yeah, I wish. Is your dad still around?
No, he passed away. I actually brought him down here to L.A., and he was with us for another 8-9 months, and then he passed away.
Yeah. All right. Sorry to hear that. I really want to know what wrestling you were going to see up there in Canada.
I don't even know if he would have remembered. He might have remembered, you know.
Yeah.
For someone that, you know, getting to know you a little bit here over the last couple minutes, you know, you're afraid to be alone. We found out that you do have a wife.
Yes, and two sons.
Okay, two sons. Great. And for someone that's like trying to push a movie and all that stuff, why can we not find you on social media?
Oh, that's a good question. I've been asked that before. I don't know. I just haven't, you know, I just spend most of the free time I have either, you know, with the boys or trying to write and writing screenplays. I'm just finishing writing a book. So it's just, I just never put the time into getting a social media presence going. But, you know, now that you mention it, I'm definitely going to put up an IMDb page and put all the projects that we're working on and the next project that's in development and stuff, because I think it's going to help us. So I'm really excited about our next project called Creature. So, you know, I got to put that up so people know about it.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome, man. Yeah. So going back to that short film. So you said it's all smoke and mirrors. All the hype is all smoke and mirrors. But
yeah.
You did win some awards with it, and it was on television, right?
Yeah, no, that first short film did really well. The second one was on television. The first short film was picked up by a theater, an independent theater in downtown Toronto called the Euclid Theater, and they ran it for a few days, which is unheard of for short films. And then, the second one did really well. That was kind of a wild, wild short film. And then, so they did well. And then I moved down here and then started making movies here. And then I got into this Hypnotica before that, we shot a movie in my house for literally no money. We're going to release that, kind of re-release it. It's called Dangerous Masala. And I play the lead in that. And it's about an Indian man who is having his first year wedding anniversary to his arranged bride who came from India. And before all his parents and relatives and all the guests arrive, they have a little bit of a fight. And it actually takes place out here, out in the back here. I don't know if you can see out there, but there's a pool of stuff. So she's putting up the stuff for the party. And he's so pissed off, he goes out in a fit of rage. He grabs her, chokes her. She tries to get away, and he drowns her in that pool. And then as he finishes and realizes what he's done, and he's totally freaked out that he's just killed his own wife on their first year anniversary, even no less, the doorbell rings and there's people coming. And so he drags her body inside and hides her in the garage, and the guests all start arriving. And so he's trying to cover up the murder the whole night at the party and making excuses for why his wife isn't there and shit. So,
I thought you were going to pull a Weekend at Bernie's there where he's like,
just yeah, it's kind of like all night. I should have. He just walks through. She walks through quickly with him holding her. That's why we should have done that scene in the movie, man. Where were you when we were writing it?
I look forward to seeing that one, man. I hope you can send us a link to that.
Sure, I will do. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So you've mentioned Hypnotica a few times here. Mm-hmm. That's what we're here to talk about.
Right.
So you do have an IMDb page, by the way. You said you were going to start one, but there is one on you.
Yeah, there is one, but what I'm saying is I got to fill it out more, put more on. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Because we've got a bunch of projects.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Yeah, because Hypnotica was great. So yeah, whatever you're working on, we want to see. So Hypnotica was originally called Unhinged.
Right.
Now it's called Hypnotica. So who makes that decision to switch the name like that?
Well, I talked with my producer, Suzanne, and we discussed it, and Netu at the time as well, I think, was here. Netu since moved back to Brazil. And we knew there was a Russell Crowe movie coming out called Unhinged, and we didn't want anything. And I never really loved the title as much. And so we were trying to figure out another title. And so just came up with, we were thinking Hypnosis, Hypnotic, Hypnotica. Hypnotica kind of had this feel of, you know, kind of an environment, a hypnotic environment going on. And so we said, well, let's go with that. So that was the name change.
I do. Yeah. Okay. I remember hearing of Unhinged. I did see that movie with Russell Crowe. That's the one where he's like, yeah, I remember.
Road rage.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's Hypnotica, man.
Dude, there's nothing worse than when you pick a name and then somebody else uses it for something.
Yeah.
It's the worst. It's the worst, honestly. And it happens even when you're writing the screenplay and you think you got a great title, but then there's a big movie coming out with the same title and you're like, ah, fuck. But, you know, for Unhinged, honestly, it wasn't a title that I was married to and that I loved that much. And so,
it was basically a working title for you.
It was kind of a working title, honestly. And then, you know, there's a great little, we had an artist do a kind of a poster, kind of like off of a Picasso when we had that title. And I thought that poster was really cool, but it's not something we can use. It's not commercial enough. But if you go on the IMDb page, I think it's still up there. Did you happen to see that?
I think I probably did because I did look at the IMDb page. So I probably did see it.
You probably did. It's really cool. It looks like a guy who's looking to the left, but also looking at you. And he looks like he's deranged. And it's, you know, from a Picasso that we just kind of changed a little bit.
Nice. So if you're watching the YouTube show, I will throw a photo of that up in the YouTube channel. So you can see that. So when you're writing a script, so you weren't committed to that title. So if someone reads your script, your screenplay, and they're like, "Ah, oh, we really like a lot of this. We really like a lot of this, but we want you to change this." And not the title. I'm not talking about the title, but a complete section of your screenplay. How do you feel about that? Do you say, "No, I'm committed to this. This is the way it has to be," or, you know, are you open to working with other?
I think that's a great question. That's such a great question because that honestly comes up all the time, all the time. And I don't know if you guys write. Do you guys write as well, or are you involved in writing any screenplays or books or any?
No, we like to start and just give up. That's our.
Okay. All right. Well, look, you know, that's cool too.
But we have a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. We can go over those over a couple of beers, but
absolutely.
Yeah. It'd be fun. But no, look, I think, you know, you always have to be open. You can't close yourself off too much, Casey. I think, you know, look, if somebody comes in with an idea, you have to, you know, and there's been ideas where for Creature, there was an idea that somebody came to me with and they said, well, what, you should do this. And I said, oh, no, it's too much. And then I went home and I thought about it and I said, oh, fuck, that's perfect. I've got to find a way to do that. So, you know, you shoot yourself in the foot if you don't consider ideas, and you shouldn't be so insecure as to not be able to look at your project and try to make it the best it can be. And oftentimes that's with cross-fertilization, with different inputs coming in, different ideas, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. So how does a guy, like, you know, like we said at the beginning here, we like to do as much research as we can, and there's very little information about you on the internet. So
yeah,
how do you go about getting Adam Johnson, you know, from the hit show Yellowstone, and get money and get funded and all that stuff to make this movie?
Well, what's that thing? I catfished him. I pretended to be this really hot 22-year-old, and I sent him. When he came over, there was this bald brown fuck with these weird glasses at the door, and he says, "What are you, her daddy?" No, listen, it was Netu, man. It was Netu, the producer, who knew Adam from auditions or something where he'd been, and he had met Adam. And so Adam actually came in, and he was here at the house before Hypnotica, and he read a part in Creature. And he read the main role in Creature, actually, in a cold reading that we did. And so I said, wow, this guy's really good. And so then I said, you know, I kept in touch with Adam, and so did Netu. And I said, Adam, I'm going to write something, and I've got you in mind for the main role. And so he said, yeah, cool, man. Adam's the nicest guy in the world. He's really, I just saw him again a couple of days ago at Pete's. We had a coffee, and he's the sweetest, the nicest guy in the world. He's actually related to Robin Lively is his sister-in-law. And Blake Lively is her sister.
Oh, okay.
So he's hooked in with the elite, but he's a very down to earth, really cool guy and stuff. And so that's how it came to be. And then I knew he could do the role based on what he did in the cold reading. So, you know, it's interesting that you never want to go to anything where you're meeting other people in terms of doing films and stuff. You never know what will come out of it. I'm sure he never thought that out of that, you know, just invited to help out with a script reading, a cold reading, that it would lead to a chance to do a role. And he won, I don't know if you're aware, but he won Best Actor in Orlando at the Freak Show, which is a big genre festival over there where you guys are. For this movie, and we won the jury award as well at that festival, and then we got into another festival, a big genre festival, even bigger in San Francisco. So
awesome.
I think a lot of it, the credit goes to him too, because, you know, when we were shooting, I remember that first day we were in the camera village or whatever, you know, where the camera and the monitors are and everything. And he was downstairs on the set, and he did a couple of takes of it. And I looked at the other producer and stuff, and we knew we had a movie, at least because we had a guy who was going to embody the role, who was the guy, you know, Adam right away was the guy. So then I felt like no matter what happens, we have potential for a movie here. So that was very exciting that day. And I remember coming home and telling my wife and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. He does a phenomenal job in it. Like I watched Yellowstone, the whole, you know, series of Yellowstone, and he only had a small part in it. But I remember, like, thinking this guy is a really good actor. Like,
you know, you did.
Some people have, really small roles in certain things, but you know that they're going to be bigger someday. You know what I mean? And yeah. He's one of those actors. Really, really great movie, man. So one of the questions I have, so there's a lot of parts, you know, this is a very small, one of my questions is what your budget is, but there's only, you know, I think five or six people total in the movie.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of scenes where it's just the psychiatrist and Adam. Was there any of that with Adam that was ad-libbed between him and the doctor? Because there's one thing that sticks out into me that I'm like, I wonder if he just threw that line in there.
What was the line?
Where he was like, I just have to take it. I feel like I have to take a big shit, doc.
No, that was actually written in. That was probably what I felt like when I was writing the screenplay. I got to take a big shit. Oh, yeah, I'll just write that in here. And okay, at least I'll get something done. But yeah, no, that was, no, they didn't ad lib much. And the other stuff I've done, I kind of, because I just feel like I don't want anybody to be stuck on a kind of a railroad track of having to say the line. So we like to have them have a lot of opportunity, because sometimes, you know, once they embody the character and everything, a lot of great stuff comes out. But in this film, oddly, we didn't have much of that. They stuck to the script almost entirely. And yeah, no, he didn't do any kind of ad-libbing that much. But yeah, he was so easy to work with. So many actors are so difficult sometimes. They create their own obstacles, and they get very kind of prissy and unnecessarily demanding. And it was just a joy to work with him, you know. Yeah.
Well, you saying that really speaks for your writing, because it comes off as like very natural, like they were just shooting, you know, well, or like not both of them, you know, the doctor, yeah. The doctor was being the doctor, but him like being the, you know, the crazy, he's, you know, got all this shit going on.
Thanks,
it really
man.
Speaks for your writing, man.
Well, thanks. Yeah. And unfortunately there was stuff that got cut out that I would have loved to keep in there, but we just wasn't going to work. And we just couldn't get it to work quite right. But thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, he did a great job, though, honestly.
Yeah.
So yeah. Who edited this thing? Now that you mentioned that there were things.
One of my best friends, she edited it. She edited Dangerous Masala as well, and that's how I got to know her. And she's an A-list editor. She's actually done a bunch of stuff. I think she's doing a TV show right now. But she used to – she edited like Little Birds, and she edited a few Sundance films that won awards and stuff. And she's done some A-list features. She kind of came up in the system as an assistant editor on A-list, big A-list movies, and then just went on independently editing and things like that. But we're really good friends, and we worked a lot. We worked together in post a lot. So I give her a lot of credit for helping make and shaping this movie. And the next movie I do, we'll probably even work together in pre-production, even on the script stage and talk about it, because she's a very creative, hands-on kind of a person, because she's shaping. She's one third of the process, right? There's pre-production, production, and then she's post. And so how we fashion the images that we have really determines what you finally see. And she's a big part of that.
Did you just sit right behind her, though, and make noises like, ooh, God, you're cutting that?
You know, she's got a temper at times, so she'd probably kill me. And she's bigger than I am, so she'd probably beat the shit out of me and throw me out of the house. So I can't say too much, man. I got to kind of keep my mouth. Whenever I broach a subject, it's got to be kind of gently. Well, you know, what do you think, Sue? Here, I'm not sure this is going to really – what? No. So she's good. Yeah.
So how do you feel about that? So we talked to Robert Ray Schaefer. He wrote – I could swing my – camera around here. He wrote Dick Dixter. He played Bob Vance on The Office. When we asked him that question, he said, unless you edit the movie, it's not truly your movie.
Yeah, that's a great point. I don't believe in that because I think it's a collaborative process, honestly. Anybody who thinks they're the only ones that make a movie is fooling themselves. It just doesn't work like that, and they're taking false credit. Movies are very collaborative. You have everything from set design to the cinematographer, and we're working with the, you know, I work with the cinematographer to frame the shots. Certain cinematographers that I've worked with, like they're very kind of more independent, and they see the shot and then you talk with them and you maybe adjust it. In this particular film, I was much more in control of how, but then he would come in and do other things. So point being that even when you're writing, people come in with ideas and ways to get the project to be better. And then in the editing room, the whole point of having an editor is that they can take the images that you have and then help the story come out. And so, you know, that's what you're trying to do. You've got a script, right? You're the story you want to tell and the depth and resonance that you want to bring out and the things that subtextually that you want to express and those things. And then you've managed to get it images, a bunch of separate, disparate images, right, in the can. And then you want to be able to step back and have somebody start to put that together. And then you work with them to kind of fashion that, and they're going to come up with ideas you never would have because you're too attached to it. And one of the biggest problems is that when you're on set and you're shooting, you know, because you were there, how difficult it was to get a shot. So it's very tough subconsciously to let go of that shot and to throw it on the floor. And so, so you need somebody there with a strong hand that tells you. And, you know, at the end of the day, the audience is the one. They'll kick your ass if you didn't. You know, if you're too self-indulgent and stuff, they're going to get bored they're going to be confused. Or it's amazing how long it takes to get. It's like every minute on screen. It's amazing how long it takes to get that minute up there. It's unbelievable between the color correction, the editing, the shooting, the writing. I mean, it's really a laborious, painstaking process. And, I definitely don't believe that you shouldn't have an editor. I think an editor is very important for you to understand, you know, to help the film, sure, not just you, to help the expression of what you're trying to do.
Sure. Yeah. And you said about how, you know, stressful it is, you know, there's so much going into the process. And then also you have to, you said about color correction and this and that.
Yeah. The but sound. Also,
but also, you know, if you do five takes, four takes, three takes, whatever, then you have to pick, you have to go through those how many times to pick the best take, you know, also.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, there's something that the story demands and you don't have the footage there. And then you're trying to figure out how you're going to get this thing, how you're going to express that and what are you going to do? Or are you going to have to lose that whole sequence in the film? It's tough. You can't, I don't think you can do justice to your own project if you do it alone in post.
Sure. Great answer, man.
No, thank you.
So I think we saw this before. This Hypnotica has not been released yet, right?
No. It's coming out.
Let's talk about that. When is the release date? Where can people find it? All that stuff.
Well, those are great questions, which I wish I had an answer to. I'm clueless. You know, no social media presence, and I don't even know when the fucking movie's coming out. But what I've been told is that it's like, March 31st, like the end of March sometime, the end of March, first week of April, but I don't know where exactly right now. Yeah. So that remains to be seen apparently.
So this show will be coming out on the 19th. So it'll be out, two Fridays from now, hopefully.
Okay.
We'll let everyone know.
I appreciate that. That would be awesome, Casey, if you guys can put the word out.
Absolutely, man. You know? Yeah, and we always do the trailer. We always do the introduction to this show after our recording here. So we're also going to play the trailer when we record our introduction for this movie. Highly recommended, man. This is a really good movie. This is right in our our sweet spot. Like Ray and I have talked about this numerous times on the podcast. An hour and 30 minutes is our sweet spot. This is actually a little short for, you know, this. I wouldn't mind a little bit more of this movie. This was, I think, about an hour and 15 minutes.
Like an hour and 17 minutes. Exactly right. I knew I should have edited myself. Damn it. it's just, I think it was the best way to tell it was in that short period, but because I think it's easy to lose the audience after a while, because it's a slow burn kind of a movie. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, you know, when you look at the subject matter of this thing, like, to do the movie, I looked into past life regression and everything. And it's amazing the stuff that's out there about past life regression. And, the editor of JAMA, I think in like 96, came out, and there was a guy, did a lot of, research that started research on past lives and reincarnation, named Stevenson. And he published a bunch of case studies in JAMA, which is the Journal of Medicine. What is the actual name? Journal of, it's a very, very famous journal. Obviously, I don't read it that much, but I should probably read it. But it's like right up there with the biggest journals in the world, medical journals.
The Journal of American Medical Association.
Medical Association. There you go. JAMA. So the editor of JAMA said that these case studies of past lives that were recounted by these children in India and Asia, there was no other plausible explanation other than this may have been reincarnation. And for the scientific journal, for the editor to say that is pretty amazing. But when you look at some of the things that is, and you see it, especially with kids like between the ages of, let's say, 3 to 6 or 7, they don't need hypnosis. And they'll tell you in detail about somebody from another village that lived a few years ago. They have no way of knowing anything about them. Nobody's gone from their village over there, nothing, but they'll tell you specific details, like this one slept with a sword over their bed, and they had a pet snake, and they gave the snake milk sometimes, and little details. And then when they went and researched it, every one of those details was accurate.
Wow.
It was stunning. Even with adults, certain adults, there's cases where they've given like specific facts that when they research back in, like, one case where this one woman had 5 past lives, and one of them was in Roman times, and she talked about in specific detail certain things, and she had a basic education at best, and the people working with her knew that there's no way she knew any history beyond what she had in school, and she knew details that were very obscure that nobody would know about that time period, the names of the people there, all these things. So it's pretty incredible. So we don't know, you know, what's really around us in a sense like that.
So at the beginning of the movie and at the end of the movie, you know, it says this is based on actual events.
Case studies. So that's
not smoke and mirrors. That's true. You've actually researched this stuff.
Oh, yeah, big time. And big time. I mean, you know, not like, you know, I'm going to defend a thesis on it. But yeah, I've researched it quite a bit.
enough to write a movie on it.
Enough to write a movie around it. Yeah. And pull it out of my ass. Exactly. And so. There's these case studies that, you know, and I was talking to a prominent LA psychiatrist about this the other day, and he said, oh yeah, man, this is like, there's no denying it for me. And he's one of the more prominent psychiatrists around here. And he firmly believes in past life regression and past lives and hypnosis somehow unlocking those things. Hypnosis to me has always been this really weird, nebulous area. I don't know what you guys think about it, but for me, I saw this film a long time ago about Freud, and Freud was in a room with a patient. And I thought, you know, there's not really a big story here, but it was like really gripping in a way, because it was like, wow, what is there? What, it's so fascinating. What could be, and what is the possibilities here? You know what I'm saying? So,
you asked, you know, how we feel about it. I honestly really haven't ever thought about it in too much detail until this moment right now.
Yeah.
That's a good time to answer the question then, when you just now thought about it. Good thinking.
Right. So when I've seen, you know, you see it on TV all the time, you see, mm-hmm. I guess, hypnotists, not magicians, hypnotists do it on television. Personally, I always think that guy's in on the act. That's bullshit. There's no way that's possible. So my question to you, you wrote a movie about it.
Yeah.
Have you ever been hypnotized?
Well, I took a weekend course after my training in medical school that was offered to doctors, where you got to learn how to hypnotize somebody. And it's definitely the real deal. It takes you into a part of the brain that is kind of like halfway between sleep and being, and it's a very suggestible state to be in. But it allows access to a lot of things, because, you know, you can't, when you're conscious and you're awake, you have a lot of blocks and barriers and things like protecting you. And so you don't easily, readily access those areas. But when your subconscious is flowing and you're under hypnosis, anything's possible. And the brain retains an incredible amount that we don't have access to. It's locked up. So we've gone through our lives and maybe past lives, and we have all this stuff. And if we could put all those pieces together, who knows what we could solve. And so hypnosis allows that, but it's for sure very real. Yeah.
Ray, how do you feel about hypnosis, buddy?
I think it's possible. You know, I watch a shit ton of Barney Miller, and earlier they had to do some hypnosis on Wojciechowicz to find out some answers and stuff. So
that's it. You can't get more inspirational than that.
If it's on Barney Miller, then I'm all in.
Exactly.
So no joke. So like I go back. I have an ex girlfriend. Her mom was. I don't think it's this. Is it the same as hypnosis? She was like a, like she would have. She had like an on. She had like an online thing where people could call her. Like her claim to fame was these police detectives in, I think, like Arizona called her one time. Like
psychic.
Yeah. Okay. A psychic. Yeah.
That's a psychic hotline. Yeah. That's different.
Oh, that's a little different. Yeah. Yeah. That's a different level of bullshit there. This is another level. But, you know, it's crazy, though. You can get people that are very suggestible to do all kinds of things under hypnosis. So, I don't know if you've ever seen that, but yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah. And I've always honestly thought it was bullshit. So you've been trained in hypnosis?
I have, but I can honestly say I'm not very good at it, because I don't think I ever properly hypnotized anybody.
Oh, okay. So the next time I'm in LA, I can't swing by and ask you if you can hypnotize me?
You can swing by, but the only way I'm going to hypnotize you is a bottle of single malt, man.
I was in California 21 times last year. I traveled for work, so I will be hitting you up the next time.
Hit me up. Love it.
I will.
Okay.
So let's talk about, now we talked about Hypnotica. You've mentioned Creature a few times. This is your next project?
That's the next project.
What's going on with Creature, man?
It's kind of a similar theme for these two. The other films I have are completely different, by the way, just so you don't think I'm just doing psychiatric-based stuff. But that involves a forensic psychiatrist. She's one of the leading forensic psychiatrists in the world. And she comes home one day after being in the prison. She does rounds in the prison, and stuff. And she comes home. This isn't set in on the East Coast in Trenton State Prison. She comes home and she's got a big house kind of halfway in the woods, and she turns off her house alarm and everything. It's beeping. She turns it off and everything. And then there's a steaming hot cup of espresso in her house there. And then she hears this big booming voice say, "Hello, doctor." And there's this guy there. And that guy is somewhat based on Richard Kuklinski, the Iceman. Do you know who that is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was watching those tapes of the psychiatrist interviewing Kuklinski, I thought, wow, can you imagine if the glass and the guards and everything wasn't there? And if this guy was in his own house and there was the killer. And then on top of that, it's a woman, and she's a beautiful woman. And very accomplished, very, very smart woman. So the movie is about her having to outwit this incredibly street smart serial killer in her own home who has his own family in the suburbs and three children who know nothing about what he does for a living. So That's the essence of that. It's kind of this tension building. You know, I would liken it a little bit to Misery or something, you know, Stephen King's Misery, a little bit. Little bit like that. Her husband is coming home, and her husband is the love of her life, and it's unbelievable what they've been through as a couple. And at the core of this film, it's really a love story. It's an incredible love story between these two people. So that's really you know, what the killer is really a catalyst for their relationship and some of the things that go on in that house. And when I mentioned earlier to you guys that, hey, somebody had this idea, why don't you go do this? And that was for this film. And it was, and it involved something more extreme than what I'd written. And at first I was like, oh, I can't do that. But then when I thought about it and put it in, it really had to do it. And it took the film to another level. So I'm very excited and hoping to be able to make that film. But it's just a matter of putting everything together.
The last guy that we're talking to it's actually airing right now, Matthew Bauer. He wrote a documentary on people named James Bond, actual people named James Bond. So like we asked him, you know, because it's a fantastic movie, man. I'm not a fan. Like we talked about this with him. I'm not a fan of James Bond at all. But I do love documentaries. It was a great movie. So we asked him, like, if he was going to stick in the same realm or stay in the same realm as documentaries. And he thinks he will stay in that realm. So, like, who were some of your influencers? Are you going to stick in this realm, like the horror, like thriller type? Genre?
Yeah, but you know, to me, there's no kind of categorizing it. You know, like Creature is both a dark thriller and it's really a love story at the root. So I don't see any problem with just following the story and making it as interesting for you, for me personally, as you can. So I don't worry about, is it going to stick to horror and stuff? But I do have other horror projects that, you know, we're writing, and some are finished and other ideas for them. But, you know, even this film, Hypnotica, is not straight up horror in a sense. It's kind of like a suspense kind of a thing. And then it becomes more of a horror kind of thing. So I don't have anything where I kind of like the idea of hopefully being able to do different genres or even combine genres, and just depends on where the story goes, you know, whatever the story asks for. But as far as doing, you know, I've never done a documentary, so I wouldn't want to go into that space. I don't know that space, and it wouldn't be for me.
The amount of research and like he even admitted, Matthew Bauer that we talked to last week, he admitted like he wishes he would have maybe taken a little more time to do some of the things that he did, because I think he got the idea and then just dove right in. You know, I think there was a lot more that he could have done with it.
Well, and you know, hindsight is always 20/20, and you know, I wouldn't you know, yeah, you always feel that way. I feel that way with Hypnotica. There's so many things I would have done differently, and with Dangerous Masala as well. You know, so many things that you, because it's always, you're always learning and trying to do better. And so, and you always, you know, you wish you'd done things differently, and what you would have done and how you would have made that scene work so it could have stayed in the film. That's always the case. But you asked about my major influences. I would say one of my biggest influences, one of the reasons I got into making movies too, was Coppola and movies like Apocalypse Now and Marlon Brando. Marlon Brando as an actor to me is unbelievable. I mean, he's just, I don't know if you guys are fans, but he is, to me, an unbelievable actor. He's a guy who, when he's on camera, he just doesn't seem to give a shit. And I love that. Right. Mickey Rourke was the same. And because I think in real life, these guys really don't give a shit. And, right. And you know, and it comes across. And tough guys in real life come across as tough guys on the screen. They're genuinely tough. So when I see some of these other guys that are kind of Hollywood bred guys trying to play tough guys on screen, I don't know. For me, I don't always buy it. It doesn't always sell for me. But
Yeah, Tom Cruise.
I saw that South Park episode coming out of the closet thing. That was
I will stand by this statement until this podcast ends.
Yeah.
Fuck Tom Cruise.
I'm sure a lot of people have. A lot of different people, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't think he gives a rat's ass what we think anyways, but that's fine.
No, he doesn't.
What's that, Ray?
I'm sure he doesn't give a rat's ass what either one of us think of him.
Yeah,
so
I don't think he'll ever hear or know what we think at all, ever. You have to worry.
Dude, for this being your first feature film, man, we are honestly, like, I couldn't find a YouTube interview or anything about you. Have you done more of these?
You guys are the first interview for this film.
All right. Awesome, dude. Like,
yeah.
We feel honored to have you, man. Honestly, this is a really good movie, and we hope it does really well.
You're so kind, and like my dad would say, thank you very much, very, very much. I really appreciate being on with you guys. You guys are salt of the earth people. I appreciate it.
Now, before you disappear on us, we have this segment where I'm going to ask you a question, and you have 30
seconds. Getting
there. Yeah, well. Let me handle it this time.
Ray's going to ask this one, man.
You got 30 seconds to answer the question.
Okay. All right? Yeah.
So, you are a very successful man. You went to...
That's a matter of opinion, Ray, but...
You made it through medical school, and you've made a movie.
Thanks.
And, according to your own words, you were the only brown kid in your school, and you didn't speak any English. Was there ever a point when you thought maybe I should take my children to Germany and put them through the same thing?
I got 30 seconds to answer.
Yeah, 30 seconds to answer that question.
No, I never thought of taking my kids to Germany and having them go through the same thing, man. That's hilarious. What a great question. No, honestly, I couldn't put my kids through the hell that I went through at parts of my life growing up. So there's no way. I protect those little guys, although I yell at them all the time, but at least it's me yelling. And then I always tell them I'm sorry and I love them. So no, I would never want them to go through that. In fact, I try to have them live a life here where they can grow up feeling that they're American, because I'm very proud to be American. I think we have to have a lot of pride in our country and who we are. And I think that I try to instill that in them and to be honorable young men. And when I grew up, my dad was a very Indian and so was my mom. So there was always this clash. So when I would go to school, it was a very, very different culture and it created a lot of confusion. I didn't know who to emulate, what to be like, all those things. So I try to give them security in that sense. Is that 30 seconds?
Yeah, man, that was...
Yeah, I think you nailed
it. It's a little longer than 30 seconds, but that was a great answer, man. So
thank you.
I have So I do have a shtick for that whole segment that Ray just blew off, but
Ray's like laughing. My whole here. I'm worried.
Yeah, my whole shtick is like so Ray can build up the question so he can think of it, but obviously he had that one built up
for a while.
Yeah, that was a great question, though. Yeah, that was a great question. No, was, Ray. I really like that. In fact, I'm going to tell my kids when I pick them up here.
So my question for that, my question off of that is, you're technically a Canadian, right?
Yeah.
So you want your kids, like you said you love America. We want our kids to be American. So like, I guess why, you know, like why not Canadian? How long have you been in America?
It's been like many years, almost 20 years, I'd say.
Yeah,
it's been a long not like 2-3 years or anything. I love Canada, don't get me wrong, don't mistake me. Canada's an amazing place, but it just happens that I moved here to make movies and stuff, so I always feel like you have to make where you are the best it can be. And so that's why I would say America is an amazing place. I think it has the potential to be the greatest country in the world. And in many ways it is. And I think we have an obligation as citizens to do our best to do that, to help this country be the best it can be. If that means raising the children a certain way so they become good American citizens, good citizens, I think that's important. And so if we're going to live here, we're going to profit and do well and survive flourish here, we owe back to the place that's giving us and affording us that opportunity. And so that means that's how you raise your children, in my personal opinion, and how you conduct yourself and you conduct other people with respect and dignity, and do your best. You're not always going to be perfect, but you do your best.
Awesome, man. Dude, I wish more American people would feel the same way as you do.
Thanks, man.
Ray knows I try to be the most honest person that I can be on this podcast. So I'm going to tell you this. Like when we started this, I mean, we watched your movie. Your movie was awesome. Yeah. It was a great movie.
Thank you. Thanks but,
like,
so much.
Coming into this interview, dude, I didn't even know what you looked like. So like, I was a little nervous. I'm always nervous. Like Ray knows that. I'm always like, I'm the same way,
Casey. I'm the same.
So like, dude, this was awesome, man. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to do this. And I know you're not on social media, but you said you're going to start an Instagram or an IMDb. So like, where can people find you when you do?
You can find me on IMDb and I'm on, I'll start to do some more work or get somebody to help me with that, with Instagram, Twitter. I've got a Twitter handle. I just never use it. Instagram and you name it. My kids are on there, so I'll get them to help me. They know
what awesome, man. Dude, but listen, so thank you so much.
I hope the other interviews are like you guys. I got like 10 of them this week, so I don't know what they're going to be like, but if it's like this, it'll be a blast. But
I can assure you they will not be. So one other thing, so like my little shtick, I do have a little shtick. So were you a fan of the, maybe Ray will have another question here for you while I build this story. Growing up, were you a fan of the Beastmaster?
No, man, I didn't see that. I saw all clips of stuff, but and as sexy as that dude was, I was not a fan.
All right, so well, the Beastmaster, Mark Singer, he came up with this segment, and we call it Real Questions. And we time the people for 30 seconds. And if Ray doesn't have another question, I'm just going to add this before the 30-second question that you answer before.
Okay. All right. So when you were in medical school, did you ever get laid just because you were in medical school?
Oh, hell yeah. That's when... That's when the legs parted, so to speak. The sea parted in medical school. I had middling success till then. Middling is putting it nicely.
Awesome, dude. Thank you so much, man.
Pub, man. Some of my buddies would go to the pub, and they had no reason to be wearing their scrubs, but they'd wear their scrubs and have a pager here. And I said, come on, fuck, dude. That's embarrassing, man.
Awesome, dude. Dude, thank you so much, man. We hope to we will definitely have you back anytime that that you would like to be back.
Hit me up when you're in LA.
I will, for sure. All right. Awesome. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Our podcast only exists because of listeners like you. To find other great shows, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com.